Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. In the studio today, it is Gregor Robertson, along with Tom Roddy and Tom Clark. Hello, everyone. How are you all doing on this wet day?
Not too bad.
Very well, thank you.
All right.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Before we get started, we have to work out two Toms. What are we going to do here?
Well, so a dear friend of mine always refers to me as Northern Tom. So you could
Northern
go with that.
Northern Tom?
Yeah. I think you're
probably,
Max.
You'd probably tell by the accents as well, probably.
Yeah, I think we'll stick with that. Yeah. And just not on the pod as well. Just all the time.
Just
yeah.
helps.
We talked
it?
About the idea of Thomas, but you know, we both decided that's reserved just for our mums. So
I was about to say, are you both Thomases?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, technically. But I mean, you know, just to our mums now, I think.
Start quivering when I hear that. No.
All right, as it is then, we've got a Northern Tom and we have Tom. There we go. And Gregor, you're in the middle. So that works all very well. Coming up, we're going to discuss the hottest prospect to come out of Scotland since Gregor Robertson. Ask if Olivier Giroud is the most underappreciated Premier League player ever. And we'll quiz our panel ahead of Sunday's Manchester Derby. All that to come after this.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now, Norwich's victory over Tottenham on penalties last night in the fifth round of the FA Cup was overshadowed by a bizarre incident after the game. Spurs' Eric Dier sensationally jumped into the crowd to confront one of the club's own supporters. Dier spotted his brother having an altercation with a fan and then went into the crowd to intervene. It's caused huge debate, as you can imagine already. So, Gregor, let's come to you first. Is there ever an excuse for a player doing this?
I think Mourinho, he doesn't deserve much credit for the things he's done of late, but he deserves credit for the way he summed it up. I think he just said, as a professional, you can't do that, but I understand why he did, essentially. Mm-hmm. He's human. He was emotional at the time. They just lost the game. And he thought he was protecting his brother, but in answer to the question, not really. You can't leave the pitch, enter the stand, kind of looking pretty aggressive as well. I think we can just be glad that nothing more serious happened. But I think also we need to counter that with this kind of growing cultural acceptance of abuse from the stands towards players. So I think there's two sides to this. He shouldn't have done that, but at the same time, players should not be subjected to abuse, and neither should their family members either.
I mean, that is the crux of it, really, isn't it? That fans will say, Tom, that they pay their money to come into a ground. They have every right to criticise a player. But there is a fine line between criticism and abuse.
Yeah, and if they did say that, they'd be very wrong. But, I think that it is, like Gregor said, a wider context on this, that it's felt like something like this had happened for a while. Especially, this is why I think there's a question mark over this new rule of substitutes going off and walking around the pitch. And we saw the incident with Granit Xhaka at Arsenal recently, or not too long ago. And it's felt like something like this would happen for a while. And the fact it's Eric Dier, someone who we all know, or we've kind of got to know, and is a very level-headed, calm. He always speaks after games, regardless of the result, and he's a very calm guy. For him to do what he did, and this wasn't the same as the Cantona incident, which has been referred to quite a lot. This, because it's not just a rush of blood. He's got to hurdle those chairs. It was the 20th row or something like that.
Quite impressive, in fact.
It was, yeah.
He's got good hips, hasn't he? To be able to hurdle those chairs.
So for him to go that far, I think it just shows that this moment's been coming for a while.
Mm. Northern Tom.
Hello.
Feels a bit strange.
Hello.
Saying that.
Sorry,
that. I mean, Gregor was obviously pointing out the fact he's a footballer. So we know that as a footballer, you have certain ways that you should behave. So no one will necessarily condone what Eric Dier has done as a footballer. But as a brother, there will be people going, well, I'll have done the same thing.
Absolutely. I mean, my brother listens to the podcast and he will cringe when he hears this. But, you know, if I ever saw my brother in any kind of altercation, and particularly as he's my younger brother, and I'd, you know, get all protective and, you know, caring and things, I'd be straight in there without even thinking. So that is a big part of this story, I think, the family element. Mm. And as Tom has quite rightly said, you know, the disconnect between fans and players and things, and families have a big part to play in that, I think. You know, we wouldn't want Eric Dier's family to not come to games. And also, I don't think as fans we want them to be kind of sanitised and sat in the boxes. Eric Dier's brother obviously wants to come and watch his brother play and be in with the fans. You know, I've been to games only recently. Lincoln signed a player in January, and in a few weeks later, his whole family were there. And you could tell they were his whole family because every time he got the ball, they were going mad and everything like that. And I thought that was lovely. That was really nice. But then at the same time, during that game, there were fans, the family were sat to my left, and then there were fans to my right giving him absolute awful abuse. I mean, he'd only been playing for us for about three games. And I was thinking, God, this is awful. You know, we should be trying to kind of welcome them in and making them feel part of the fan base so that in turn the player feels a bit more connected with the club. And, you know, as Tom says, this kind of slightly worrying divide is happening. I think if we park the issue about the brother, because for me, as I said, that kind of clouds it slightly, because you would always, I think most people would do that with a family member. Mm-hmm. But more worrying is the kind of vicious fan, you know, dialogue and, you know, the things that come out against players. I mean, I'm interested in Gregor saying that it seems to be worse now. So, you know, you didn't feel it was this strong when you were playing.
No, I'm not saying it's worse now. I remember actually sitting in the stands and hearing people kind of abusing players and knowing their family are around as well, like teammates of mine.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's kind of the fact that nowadays, within 5 minutes, there's so many clips up on social media of him vaulting the steps, and you know, it just seems more immediate. I think there is something in that kind of growing divide, but I don't think this is new. You know, fans have always kind of vented their spleen from the stands, and supporters have always had their family members there. So these kind of things probably happened in the past. It's just the fact that he's taken this step.
Have you ever seen anything like this before when you've played?
No, I've seen arguments. I've seen kind of players being held back on the touchline, or, you know, going into the tunnel and fans running over, and there kind of been some pretty horrible language. But I've never seen anyone claim off the, you know, step off the pitch and step into the stand and make their way with no uncertain terms of what he was going to do if he could get hold of the guy, I think. So no, I've never seen that before.
Tom, you were very sort of quick to answer when I mentioned that some fans will say, I have every right to go into a ground and aim some sort of criticism, whether it stretches to abuse, at players because I'm paying to go into that ground. I'm essentially paying their wages, they will say. Why were you so quick to say, no, that's not right?
Well, I mean, I just think that you may pay and you may be paying to be entertained, and I understand that, but I don't think the level of abuse that it gets to warrants the kind of actions that you do see. And we see it every single game we go to, you know, sitting in a lot of press boxes around it, the things you hear that they say to players is horrific, and I can understand. While Northern Tom was talking about you know, the family sitting in being divided as well. I think I know at Stamford Bridge they have, in the corner of the ground, they have a glass boxed off section where the families sit, and there's something quite special about the being part of the club, and it's nice for the families to be able to be part of it as well, and be to kind of feel it. And you know, you wonder whether Dier's family would think twice now, or they probably would be thinking twice now, and that's a shame.
Well, the relationship with the club will have changed, probably irreparably. And I don't think that's that unusual. I don't even think it takes this for that to have happened. I think, you know, any time they hear fans and things are going badly for a club or for your brother or son or whatever, and you hear things like this, then I think your relationship with the club and its supporters is damaged, because you're going to be protective. So I don't think it's anything new. I just think the fact that Dyer has actually gone to these lengths is kind of, this happens a lot. This happens all the time.
But I think it comes, there's an issue, and I've talked about this before on the podcast in relation to referees, and it's the choice of language that I think is changing a bit these days. And it's, you know, if I was Eric Dyer's brother and I was heard someone say, "God, Eric's having a bit of a shocker today," that's fine. But if I heard him saying, "Oh, he's a disgrace, he never tries, you know, absolute nicking a living, blah, blah," calling, you know, that kind of higher level of questioning.
And every name under the sun.
Yeah, about his kind of professional standing and all that kind of stuff, which you do hear all the time. You know, and we're so passionate as football fans that we lose sense and sight sometimes. And I think that's where I think it's got a little bit worse than it used to be. Certainly from my point of view, going to games, the type of thing that is said about players is the kind of thing that you have no idea. You can't even make a judgment on. You can watch a game and say, "God, he's having one today." But then you can't say X, Y, or Z about his personality or his standing as a human being, which often does get said. And I think that's what's got a lot worse.
Well, my other half played the game, and I've been at games where I've heard abuse aimed at him. Mm. And it's such a painful experience to go through. I remember I've sat in a game with tears in my eyes because... Yeah. It was just that horrid to hear the level of abuse that could be aimed at someone that you think, you don't know that person personally. Why on earth would you talk about them like that? And obviously, Gregor, footballers aren't paid to have abuse hurled at them.
No. No, but it almost immediately becomes part of the job, I think. it's not something you're taught in an academy. You think you're going to be subjected to this kind of thing. I've spoken about it before, how you said the other day when Matt was talking about playing over 50s football and it being like, go back to playing football as a kid. As soon as you become professional, this is one of the reasons why it feels like it's a job, because the sort of outside, the maelstrom that's swirling around in the stand around about, and the sort of, you know, there's no rhyme or reason for any of that kind of language. So it does detract a wee bit from the supposed joy of being a footballer.
Did you never get close to kind of, just I'm going back to my point about the kind of type of thing that's been said, you know, you've talked before about you're not minding that referees say, "Oh, Robbo, you're having one today." You know, as a fan, never said something that you thought, "Oh, you've gone way too far there, mate."
Yeah, I mean,
and sure. But have you always ignored it, or have you ever, you know, come close to turning around and saying something to them?
I mean, maybe like a pointed look in the stand, but you can't let it affect you at all. I mean, of course I have. I've been. And it's worse even the lower down you go, because you can sometimes hear the voices. You know,
you're much closer, aren't you? Yeah.
You can pick
ways,
out the person in the crowd rather than in among 60,000 people at White Hart Lane. So, absolutely, I've experienced that. But I've beyond kind of having given someone a bit of a dagger eye, I've never considered jumping into the stand.
Mm. I mean, all that being said, obviously what Eric Dyer did as the footballer, he shouldn't have done. We know that. And perhaps we could also argue that maybe his brother should have shown some more restraint, albeit we don't know what was said. With regards to Eric Dyer, should he face punishment, Tom?
I think yes, in some form. And even if that's just a slap on the wrist, I think that's okay. But I don't think it can go unpunished.
I'm not sure what it would be for, though. I mean, is there a rule that says a player can't leave the pitch and enter the stand?
It. I mean, a lot of people have done the comparisons of, well, a fan can't enter a pitch, so why should a player be? But I agree. I'm not quite sure what's in the law books that suggests that he can't actually go into the stand.
It's the nature in which he goes.
But
into
it's the aggressive
stand, yeah,
nature of it.
You know, there was a clear. I mean, there's evidence. So much evidence we see online of the nature of it and the clear intent that was there. Because otherwise, you know, we see it a lot with players going into the crowd to see their families. But that's the issue. I don't know whether there should be a game ban. I don't think so.
Mm. What we should say is that Tottenham, the Metropolitan Police and the Football Association are all investigating the incident, and a fan has already been identified. Asked if the club will discipline Dyer following the incident, which has evoked memories of Eric Cantona's clash with a supporter at Crystal Palace back in January 1995. Jose Mourinho said, if the club does that, I would not agree, but he did wrong. Now, obviously, as I said, it's kind of evoked memories, Northern Tom, of that. It's so strange to say that.
I should have a flat cap on.
People going to get complaints too.
I know. It's all in good taste.
Yeah, I asked for this to be fair.
It evokes memories of the Eric Cantona clash, but obviously that went a lot further than what happened with Dyer.
Yeah.
Tom's not sure about a ban. Where would you stand on some sort of punishment?
Well, I go back to, you know, I say about my point about football and, you know, dialogue and the language that's used. I would like to kind of see Tottenham take control of the scenario and Eric Dyer take control of the scenario and, you know, take ownership of it. And even maybe even with the fan, put out something, some kind of video or discussion or something that says, you know, we've had a chat about this and actually this is not right. This is what happened. Complete transparency about what went on. And, you know, actually, we as a club, Tottenham, we're in a bit of a bind at the minute. We need all of you behind us. And change the narrative around it slightly. Mm. And, you know, it's all clever PR, isn't it? And I'd be on next week saying, slagging them off for saying it. But it would be a very clever move to take ownership of it and, you know, change the narrative around it all slightly. Because as Gregor said, this could cause a significant rift between Dyer, his family, the fans, between the other players who will understandably be supporting Dyer. We understand that his brother went into the changing room after the game with Eric Dyer. And so this, I think they should see it as an opportunity to bring the club back together after a row.
It's so interesting that you've said that, because speaking to Fraser Franks a little bit earlier on, the former Newport Stevenage Luton defender, and he mentioned an episode at Luton where something very similar happened and the Luton captain went into the crowd to have it out with a fan, and that led to a galvanising of the whole club, if you like. Mm. And they had been on a bad run of form. It ended up they ended up winning promotion from from the conference, as it was. Yeah. So I can see where you're coming from. Mm. It could bring them together.
I think it's also, I mean, is it worth? It's Jose Mourinho. There's something. The club does seem to have descended into a terrible state very quickly.
Yeah.
And do we think the atmosphere had that's kind of surrounding Tottenham at the moment had anything to do with the episode in the first place?
Well, I mean, it doesn't help, does it? The fan, you know, you go to. I'm not saying I can understand. I don't know what the fan said, and I don't condone the kind of abuse that I've talked about. But you know, I go to games, I get upset, I say things that maybe half an hour later I'd regret. But I go because I want to see my team win, and then when we play badly, I get very frustrated. So that creates a negative atmosphere. That's obvious, but.
But are you aiming that at somebody, or are you just venting?
It's more venting, yeah. So I think it is becoming a little bit pointed, isn't it, these days, with singling out certain players, which Mourinho doesn't help with, does he? You know, he often refers to certain players after games, which then helps a fan narrative, you know, progress that narrative afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, he's cultivating the negativity, really. Mm. He's been saying that we've got a long, hard 3 months remaining after the defeat of Chelsea. I mean, it's been pretty negative all around. I don't know whether, no one knows whether that had anything to do with it, but certainly I don't think Dyer should be punished too harshly at all.
Elsewhere, it was the Giroud and Gilmore show at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea beat Liverpool to set up a quarter-final at Leicester. Let's talk about the Scottish teenage sensation then that is Billy Gilmore. The 18-year-old had punters and pundits purring with his display at Stamford Bridge. Gregor, I suppose I should let you take it from here, really. You must be so excited about this prospect.
Oh, Billy. Giving hope to a nation, young man. No, seriously, it was a joy to watch. And within moments of the kickoff finish, I had a friend sending me clips of that drag back on Fabinho, and he just sent him for a taxi. These are the kind of things we do not tend to see from Scottish footballers, to be brutally honest. And he's got, you know, he controlled the game in terms of like making little angles to get on the ball, but also he had that bit of bite about him as well. There was one tackle in the first half where he threw his entire body behind it, and he probably has to because there's not much of him. But and he kind of got in a wrestle with Adam Lallana on the floor, came out with it. You know, there were so many, he skipped through midfield a few times, got a little turn of pace. But the main thing is he's just a very un-Scottish looking footballer. And well, he is in a way because he's small and thin, kind of harking back to Gordon Strachan's chat here.
And his mini footballs.
But technically, you know, that kind of little midfield pivot who controls the tempo of the game, little short passes, and no, he was a joy to watch.
Yeah, and what's so interesting, at being just 18 and obviously not really playing much for Chelsea as things stand, that you can see, Tom, there's an obvious trust already within the squad. They were happy to, you know, to lay off a ball to him when it was a tricky situation because they knew that he would be able to get them out of it.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Chelsea released a statement saying Gilmore was a fully fledged part of the first team.
Being promoted
Which isn't really a common thing, is it? You don't really see that too often. It's just a natural development. And it was kind of this sign of, we're trusting you. It looked like it was maybe a bit too soon for him to be going into the first team. Because I saw him play for the first time last year, weirdly against Liverpool in the under 23s. And he was just miles above anyone else, miles. And he even though he is small and slight, he had that meerkat head where it was just up on all the time.
That pass in the first half when Aspilicueta fired it in, and it was kind of on the edge of his own box. And they paused it on the TV when he got his head on a swivel. And these are the things, like, you know, that is a top level footballer.
That's what I mean. He knows what's going on all around him. And good luck,
I should just
smile.
Say for listeners, Gregor doesn't often smile on the podcast.
Honestly,
absolutely beaming. Right,
honestly,
now. Never seen him this excited.
Honestly, I think, you know, move over Phil Foden.
Well, he is the newest teenage sensation that we're all talking about. But surely, if we're looking ahead to Euro 2020, for example, Gregor, you can't just rely on him.
No, we also
sounds
need
like
to get
there.
I know, this is it.
We need to get there first.
Absolutely, you need to get there first.
I mean,
but,
you know, again, I was kind of had a wee look on social media, and there's that debate opened immediately. Should he be, you know, should he be playing against in the qualifiers and stuff? And it was interesting too. Southgate, again, Gareth Southgate spoke about Phil Foden, saying it's hard to gauge his level. You know, people say he's not playing enough first team football and stuff. I think you see players of that talent, it doesn't matter. You see them, they're a kind of smacky in the face talent. Phil Foden is the same. It doesn't matter how much football he's playing, he's good enough to be a part of the squad. So absolutely, he should be a part of any future Scotland squad. But that's not to say he should just kind of walk into the team. That's actually probably our best, the place where we're best stocked. We've got Super John McGinn as well.
You've got a lot of midfielders in the Scotland squad.
Yeah, we have. Callum McGregor, Ryan Christie, both excellent players at Celtic.
John Fleck.
As I say, John McGinn, who's still not made much impact, but he's been brilliant this season.
McTominay.
So, yeah, I mean, if
you're going to win it, aren't you?
Well, I think you should stick McTominay in centre half because I'm struggling there.
Play three at the back, play like seven in midfield, and, you know, hope for the best.
But he's different to any of them. You can see that in like the two times I've seen him play. He's a different footballer to any of them.
There is also, I think from his side, I think the plan was to send him out on loan this summer coming to get experience, because there are a few who are ahead of him in that Chelsea squad. But now you think Lampard's going to integrate him now, isn't he? He's going to be a full part of that squad, and you'd expect to see him a bit more, even if it's before that Leicester quarter-final.
Mm. Northern Tom. Obviously, Gregor is buzzing about our certain Billy Gilmore, and Gregor's just said there, you know, you can see just from those rare appearances that he's made so far in the first team squad that there is talent there, that he should be picked for Scotland, for example. But can you really judge someone on just a short amount of appearances that they may have made for a club?
To me, the most interesting thing about, he was clearly incredibly technically gifted. It was the confidence, to me, that was the most telling thing. You know, you're playing the best team in the country. Liverpool put out a very, very strong team, even though Salah and Firmino were on the bench. It was, and I take a quote from James Gearbrand's excellent analysis of his performance. The pose that he had on was arms out for the whole game, saying, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. Wherever he was on the pitch, edge of his own box, edge of the Liverpool box, with players around him, give me the ball, I'll dictate it, I'll call the shots, I'll help you out. That to me, whenever you watch a player, is the most telling thing. You know, I'm technically, clearly, clearly very talented, but the confidence was the most brilliant thing.
And
me.
You combine that with kind of positional intelligence. Like I say, it was just sometimes just 5 or 10 yard runs to make an angle on the ball, but also off the ball. There was that time in the first half when I think Sadio Mane was bursting through, and he saw it a couple of steps ahead. Mane was making the run, and he kind of covered in. He just got his body in between and shepherded it out. Yeah, I think he's great.
Any excuse to bring up that he's great. No, he certainly is a talent, that is for sure. So from this new youngster emerging domestically here to a veteran, shall we say, of the Premier League, we've got to talk a little bit about Olivier Giroud as well. He tormented Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk at times. So why has it taken this long, Tom, for Frank Lampard to trust him?
I don't think it's particularly to do with Giroud as a player. I think Frank Lampard knows he's a good player. I think it's to do with the system that Frank Lampard wants to play at Chelsea. Because when Tammy Abraham, the injury happened, it was against, in the Arsenal game, wasn't it? He sustained the injury. And when he came back, but yes. When Giroud finally came in, you saw the way in which they attacked was different, and it worked last year. Giroud, to me, is a striker who complements other players. So last year, when Chelsea were at their best, it was when Eden Hazard was playing with Giroud because he played off him so nicely. He holds the ball up so much better than Tammy Abraham, but I don't think he's particularly a star striker. I think he's. Which is going to upset Gregor.
No, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, I mean, I think Tom's summed it up there because he's not a player who you would want to be someone you relied upon for goals for a top team in the Premier League. And actually, there are times when I watch him play and I think, in another life, a player with his skill set and qualities could be like a journeyman championship striker.
You are having one.
What?
Because
it's normally me that comes out with the outlandish comments on this podcast. That is outrageous.
Well,
Olivier Giroud in the championship.
His biggest strength is physicality.
No, it's definitely not his biggest strength. That's just one of his strengths because he's a big bloke. That's not his biggest strength.
What's his other strength?
You've just talked about Billy Gilmore being positionally adept and seeing spaces. Giroud does that as well. In order to create space, as Tom said, for the likes of Eden Hazard, he was superb.
I don't think that's true.
I've not seen a striker for a long time give Virgil van Dijk a hard time like he did.
Physically,
and he didn't just do it
physically.
Nah,
it was
positionally as well, pulling him out of position, creating space behind the Liverpool defence for the Ross Barkley goal. Giroud doesn't just create that goal by winning the header, beating van Dijk in the air, an impressive feat in itself. He does it by pulling him short.
I mean, that's very basic stuff. He leads the line alone, so. His job is to occupy one of the centre-halves, and sometimes it's to drag them out of position.
Must have played with a lot of men who lead the line very well. Are you saying that role, you can just transplant them into any team? So think about the players
Because of that's his biggest strength, and because of his lack of other strengths, you could transplant him into a team much further down the league, and he wouldn't look any better.
Oh, he'd look miles better. Come on. You're welcome to come and watch Lincoln in League One with me if you want. Listen,
He does the same thing Matt Reed did for Lincoln.
Let's not bring Matt Reed.
We're getting a bit niche here, maybe.
We really will fall out.
But let me ask then. You seem to be obviously in Giroud's camp, Northern Tom.
Yes.
Are we underappreciating him?
Absolutely. I think he's a brilliant player. I think his first touch is excellent. I think he's very... you've had your bit. Let me have a go. All right. I think he's very technically gifted, as you could see if we remember one of the great Premier League goals that Arsenal scored against Norwich. I think did Jack Wilshere finish it off?
Yeah.
Brilliant passing move. Giroud, key to that, laying the ball off. Perfect weight of pass, perfect positional movement as well into the space to drag the Norwich defenders around. He also scored one of the most outrageous flick goals.
Yes.
I mean,
I'm
I love Matt Reed, but he wouldn't be scoring one of them.
Gregor.
Well, it was instinct. But it was
come on.
It was instinct.
The lads won the World Cup.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I find it incredible. I think in any other kind of generation, that would not be the
case.
And
you say he's not scored goals. He's scored 39 goals for France in 97 matches. He scored 73 in 108.
22 of them were in 45 friendlies.
It's still a match. He's still got to score goals in a friendly.
He scored 4 goals in 21 games in finals.
I'm not saying his goals are his strength, but I'm saying he can score goals. Yeah, I'm saying he's a striker who brings other people into play, like Tom said.
I mean, you've got... Look at all the praise. I'm not comparing him to Firmino here before you get too excited, but you've got you've got Firmino and McGoldrick at Sheffield United. You're looking at me like, where's he going with this?
No, I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going with this.
The goals, they're not
they're
in their team.
They're good footballers.
But you're saying David McGoldrick is a better technically gifted footballer than Olivier Giroud?
Absolutely.
You are having one today. There's no way. I like all those players that Tom said. I like them for a similar reason, because I think they have a vital role to play in the team. I think Giroud is as good as those players technically.
Well, no, that's not true. I mean, Firmino sort of building play like a kind of false.
He does do that. He does do that.
No, he doesn't.
He was doing that on against Liverpool. They weren't just
lumping
it forward.
I think he is a hard-working striker.
Of course he is a hard-working striker.
That's
who
what
happens
I'm
to be tall
his biggest
and
strength is his physicality.
No. His biggest strength.
Other strengths don't add up to that of those of an elite striker. If he was playing in a weaker team, he wouldn't score as many goals.
But drawing out a defender isn't down to physicality. That's
I don't think he does that.
He does do that.
I don't think he does that. I mean, his movement's not particularly...
His movement is standing. I mean, look. I know we're heading into the realms of where you're going to go. I played the game, mate, back in the box.
No, I've never seen that.
And you'd be well within your rights. You'd be well within your rights to do that. But
I'll also say that he's someone I wouldn't like to play against. So I can say those two things together. If I was a centre half, I agree. He roughed up Van Dijk. He gave Gomez a tough time. But that is because of his physicality, and that you don't see that much anymore. So he does provide something. He stretches the game for whatever team he plays for, and he creates space for other players. That's not born from intelligence. That's born from his physicality.
Definitely need intelligence to be good at that. You can't just be a big bloke. I mean, I'm 6'3". I'm quite big. I can't create space just by being on the pitch.
Well, I know that, Tom, but...
You know.
But you're like lower than basic.
Yeah.
Which is what you described Olivier Giroud as.
Words of my mouth now.
You did refer to him, but when you were going through the qualities, you thought that's just basic.
Yeah.
Well, dropping off into, or like...
I'm just saying.
No, but doing it intelligently and at the right time. You just talked about Billy Gilmore doing that at the right time and at the right moment and into the right areas of space. Giroud does that all the time.
I don't think he does.
Look, Tom was talking about how brilliant Eden Hazard was. You know, I'm not saying Real Madrid should sign Olivier Giroud to make Eden Hazard perform, but he struggles without that kind of player around him. But you couldn't just have any random big striker. You have to have one.
Of course, he's of our level
and clever.
He's of our level, but I sometimes sit back and watch him play and think, I'm amazed that he played for two of the biggest clubs in England and won the blooming World Cup. I'm astonished by it. And I see what he does. I know he improves. He creates space for players who are better than him around him. But I don't think that's enough for me to be saying that he's an elite striker or underappreciated.
Olivier, if you're listening, you're more than welcome to come on the pod and have a discussion with Gregor next week.
Well, I'm going to have to ding-ding call time on that one. I think we haven't
really won? Who
well,
won?
Well, that's it. I'm not sure. I think
you
maybe
pick.
Drawn.
You pick.
Well, I...
Go on.
I've been sitting here trying to work out what Gregor's vendetta is against Olivier Giroud. So
he done to you?
Yeah,
Gregor?
Tom, stick together. All right?
I was going to say I'm good. With Northern.
Have you ever
Tom.
Played against him?
No.
Was there something that he did to you in a game that you just thought that's it?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, he would have got the better of me. No problem. No problem with saying that. But I just think for the top level, no.
All right. Ding ding. Let's move on.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we want you to remember this name, and that is Daniel Batz. German fourth-tier side Saarbrücken have knocked Bundesliga side Fortuna Düsseldorf out of the DFB Pokal Cup, so that's like the FA Cup in Germany, after goalkeeper Batz saved not one, not two, not three, or even four, but five penalties. Now, the game finished 1-1 after extra time before Batz saved 4 out of 10 penalties in the shootout, as well as one during the second half. Saarbrücken play in the Southwest Regional League and had to win a local cup to even qualify for this national competition. And we felt that deserves a little mention today. But who would your Daniel Batz be in a matter of life and death when it comes to a penalty shootout? If you had to choose one goalkeeper from past or present to save that all-important spot kick, who would it be and why? So, panel, Tom, who's your pick?
I am going for the only man to ever save a Matt Letizia penalty.
Ooh.
And that is Mark Crossley.
Ah.
He was also in an FA Cup fifth round replay against Tottenham Hotspur in 96. He saved 3 of the penalties, so not quite Batz level, but pretty good. And the last one, I believe the story went, the last one was against Teddy Sheringham, and I love this idea. It's like Tim Krul last night, this idea that goalkeepers in penalty shootouts are, you can only win, can't you? You can't lose as a goalkeeper. And I think Teddy Sheringham was up last, and he just gone from Tottenham, and he said, I know where you're going to put it, and he saved it. So Mark Crossley's my man.
He gets your nod. Gregor, you sort of made a funny face there.
Yeah, so Southern Tom over there, despite my protestations, went with Mark Crossley, who I was going to pick, because Big Norm, as he's known, he was a goalkeeper coach when I was at Chesterfield, and even then, I mean, he must have been in his 40s then. He was just like a giant wall in the goal, maybe because he kind of had one or two extra dinners as well, but he was, even then at that age, he was the least agile looking goalkeeper you ever saw, but he always got in the way of things. He was a great goalkeeper, but I've not picked him because Tom has. I'm going to go for Fraser Forster. He saved 15 out of the 42 penalties he's faced, including one very recently in the cup final against Rangers. And he's always been outstanding for Celtic at saving penalty kicks. And in general, actually. I mean, he had a dodgy time at Southampton, but he's been brilliant for Celtic. And that includes penalties, some very big ones as well. So I think I would choose him. There's a few others. I mean, Pepe Reina was one. I hope I'm not stealing yours now, Tom.
I bet he couldn't stop one from Wee Billy, though, could he, Fraser Forster? And stop one from Wee Billy.
No, well, I've not seen Wee Billy take a penalty kick, but I'm sure he does it beautifully.
Okay, so that's your pick. Come on, Northern Tom, what have you got for us?
I feel like I should be picking Northern players as well, but I don't think any of them are. Actually, one of them is. A few shout-outs from some loyal listeners. Aurelio Gomez has got a pretty decent penalty record. Dimitri Karin, as well as wearing jogging bottoms, was also pretty good at saving penalties.
Dimitri Karin.
Whilst at Chelsea. I think we should give a nod to Tim Krul for his heroics for Norwich last night. But I am going to pick Portuguese goalkeeper Ricardo for his efforts in the 2006 World Cup against England, where I think he saved 3 penalties, Gerrard, Lampard and Carragher, which I think was the first time a goalkeeper saved 3 penalties in a World Cup shootout. So I think in 2004, he also was a star in a penalty shootout by scoring a penalty. And I think he then also threw his gloves off to score the penalty and then saved one with his gloves off as well. So I'm either going to pick him, but to give a Northern lad a mention, someone who's taken an absolute kicking on this podcast, Jordan Pickford would be up there for me for saving a penalty, purely for his effort to stop Carlos Bacca in the World Cup last year, sticking his arm up to save that spot kick. I think he deserves a mention when it comes to saving penalties.
Yes, I mean, you've all raised some very good ones. I'm surprised none of you mentioned the Brentford keeper, Richard Lee, who saved three penalties as we made it to the Southern Area final of the Football League Trophy against Charlton.
That classic shootout.
Indeed. In fact, we actually reached the final that year in 2011, but then lost to Carlisle. So we'll gloss over that. But that was a great shootout. I remember being there. It was really good. let me just say that a lot of people backed you for Mark Crossley. We've had a few tweets. JT, Nick Thompson. I don't know when I say JT. I don't think it's Justin Timberlake or John Derry. It's someone called JT. Nick Thompson, Stuart George. There's also been a shout for the Flying Hippo, Andy Gorham.
Of course.
That was from Paul Corrigan.
It's Rangers, though.
Even Adrian Durham got involved and mentioned Freddie Woodman as well. Mm. So lots of people getting involved. There's also, I should say, Ryan, the Arsenal fan, who says, David Seaman, he's the reason I support the Gunners, growing up as a Sunday League goalkeeper, watching his penalty heroics at Euro 96, wanting to be just like him. Loads of people also mentioned Peter Cech and Peter Schmeichel as well. But really interesting, isn't it?
You would have thought, I would have thought Van der Sar as well, but then I looked at his...
I didn't get many responses for him.
9 of 58 in his career.
He saved big penalties, though. He saved one in a Manchester derby, I think from Darius Vassell, maybe, with his legs, knocked it over the bar.
Did he?
I think I don't know whether I've got that right. But he definitely saved a penalty in a Manchester derby. I don't know whether it was Darius Vassell.
Do you know what? It's really handy you mentioned the Manchester derby, because obviously that's coming up this weekend. It is the 182nd Manchester derby on Sunday afternoon. Man City taking on Man United at Old Trafford. And I've got a little quiz for you ahead
of it.
So come on, let's get your thinking caps on. Six players have made Premier League appearances for both sides. Can you name all six? It's a collective thing, this. It's
Carlos Tevez is the obvious one, isn't it?
Yes, Carlos Tevez, we'll give you that.
Owen Hargreaves,
27 times he played for Man United, just the once for City.
Mm. Who was that? There was a goalkeeper who played for both in the 90s.
Ooh.
So as we're on goalkeepers.
Ooh.
In the Premier League era. God.
There's a couple really big names.
Any clues?
You mentioned a goalkeeper, and there is a goalkeeper, and I mentioned him.
Schmeichel.
Of course.
Indeed.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
So 292 times he played for United, just 29. Peter Schmeichel. I know. Come on.
God, we are better than this.
What industry do you work in?
This is our job.
What about a striker? Perhaps more familiar.
Andy Cole.
Yes, 195 times for United he played. Just the 22 for Manchester City.
Did a guy called Terry Cook ever play?
That was
Man
the
City.
One I didn't think you'd get.
You've been Googling over there.
No, honestly not. Is that the one where you, producer Max, promised someone a fiver before the show? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Get in.
Oh, Max, what have you done?
Excellent.
Yeah. Crikey, yes.
I think he played like once or twice for United in the Premier League and then moved to City.
Yep, and then played 20 games.
Then moved to America. I wrote his biography.
There is one more who played, I can say, over 100 times for Manchester United in the Premier League and just 10 for Manchester City. Also played for another Premier League side as well. And it wasn't the red side of Liverpool, put it that way.
Andrei Kanchelskis didn't play for Man City, did he?
He did.
Yes.
He did.
Get in.
On loan from Rangers. Well done, Northern Tom.
Northern Tom wins.
Thank you.
No, it was a collective.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Don't worry, but you did do very well.
I did, thank you.
And you win a fiver.
And I've got a fiver for Max, which is excellent.
An all-round good day for Northern Tom. Okay, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Tom Roddy and Northern Tom.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online or on your smartphone or tablet.
It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information, and we'll be back on Monday.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.